Hey everyone, welcome to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael Cottrell, your host for today, and I'm joined here, as always, by my twin brother, player two since the womb, Matthew Cottrell.
Wiggity wiggity whack whack!
We've got a great show for you today, but let me set the table first. We the People is a weekly podcast, airing on the Bento Block's channel on YouTube. Bento Block is like a little media thing that I started, a little channel where I've got like vlogs and game stuff and movie stuff, all sorts of internet
goodies,
content, goodies, you shall say. So this is a weekly podcast that posts on SoundCloud and iTunes as far as the audio version goes. For the video version, check out the YouTube channel for that. And, you know, do the internet thing. So consider supporting us by subscribing, you know, giving to the Patreon. All that stuff really helps to make this a bigger and better thing every week compared to the week before. So without much further ado, we're going to kick things off with the first segment of the show, Now Playing. Matthew.
Michael.
What have you been playing this week?
What the fuck have you been playing? Why am I always going first?
I mean, I can go first. You want me to break this off? So I've been playing
fuck that. I want to go first. Just kidding.
So I've been playing a game called Pokemon Duel.
It's time.
So I don't know if you guys noticed that this kind of dropped out of nowhere. Pokemon just launching another iOS game on the App Store. It's probably on Android too, but I have an iPhone, so the iOS store is where I downloaded it. Just kind of popped up out of nowhere. I read an article about it and just thought I'd check it out. It was sort of based on these, I think they did actual physical figures for this board game where they, on the bottom, they kind of spin and, you know, they have a couple different attacks that they can do, different effects. And it's a board game where you sort of want to get to the center of your opponent's board. And so you can get there by blocking the spawn points of the opponent. You can get there by defeating all the Pokemon in your path. And different Pokemon have different abilities to where, you know, one of the guys I got lately is Skarmory, and he can fly over Pokemon that he is fighting, or Nidoran can poison them and weaken their attack before another Pokemon like Raichu, who's a pure attacker, comes in and beats them based on that lowered attack. So there's all sorts of stuff like that. The game itself is very deep in that regard. If there's all these different Pokemon, all these different team combinations you can do, and a couple different ways that you can win. You can either stall out the clock with more of a defensive strategy, you can go on the offensive and try and take it by pure power, or you can be really tricky with your movement and try and get to the opponent's spawn points, block them, and then sandwich in between. Because you can knock out Pokemon by beating them in attack through special effects, or by surrounding it with your Pokemon. So if your Pokemon surrounds an opponent's, it gets sent to the PC to heal. So it's an interesting board game. You might be thinking to yourself, how much does this game cost? It's free. It does the whole mobile thing. You need to buy these gems to buy the booster packs. The exchange rate between the gems and real money is pretty terrible. It costs over $5 to get a booster pack with four different figures in it, which is kind of insane. It's kind of insane, especially considering when they do rankings of the game, and you play like a league mode, and you can, you know, go up in the ranks or down based on your winning or losing. The problem here is that the top ranked people, because you can check them out in the app, I looked, the top ranking people just have like, you know, 6 out of 6 legendary Pokemon, the best of the best that only the best money can buy. And the only way to really guarantee that you're getting a Pokemon is to spend so much money that you're getting these little materials. Because no matter how much you spend, the booster packs are always random, but you get these materials in them. So you use your real money to buy the gems. You use the gems to get the booster pack, and the booster pack has materials, and you use the materials to get the Pokemon that you want.
Bruh.
I know. It's kind of a weird trap to make you spend money.
Sounds like a conundrum.
Yeah, it's kind of a game that plays you instead of you playing the game.
I think that's the mobile app game.
That's sort of the model that people want to go with. It makes a lot of money because, I mean, this guy who's on the top, I can't imagine how much he spent to make sure he got 3 Latias, 2 Latios.
You should
and
message him directly and say, Vettel. Was it worth it?
Well, he is number Pokemon, one in the world.
You're king of the Pokemon must feel pretty Park, good. World. I don't know what the fuck that means, but
he must feel pretty good, all things considered. Now, I don't have a problem with buying the booster packs, but it's, you know, having that clear curve between, like, how much money you spend and how good your deck is, that rubs me a little bit the wrong way. That being said, I do appreciate the disclaimers that they have. When you first start the game, it tells you, just so you know, you can beat this game entirely without spending a dime. That's nice.
Yeah, it doesn't try to paint itself as being something that it's not.
Right.
Like, and it's free. We're not charging you anything unless you actually want to be able to compete. Then you're spending money. It's like upfront saying, like,
that's where the problem is. Yeah. And they even go so far as to limit the amount of money that you can spend in a month to sort of protect against some of those class action lawsuits that have happened based on kids shopping with their parents' credit cards in the mobile sphere. But the limit is so strange. So I dumped $6 into it just to see what that'll get me. Spoiler alert, it doesn't get you much. That like little bit, you know, you have like 5,000 points, and the points are different than like the gems and different than the amount of money that you can spend in the game. Or maybe it's like a $50 limit, but there is a limit, but it's very high of like the amount of money that you can spend in a particular month. Definitely more than you would purchase more than a AAA game, your average 3DS game these days. So that part's weird. If you guys do get into it, I swear it's, you know, once you get past all that microtransaction stuff, it is a really fun game. It's fun to collect the different Pokemon and see what different strategies you can do. It has a full-fledged story mode.
The coolest thing story about mode. It that look to me, what looks about it is the just the figures. They just look so cool.
They do look really cool.
It's like you kind of just want to see what each Pokemon looks like.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of like the trading card game, except the figures are cooler in the sense that they have this cool stand that they're on, and they will they I got an Empoleon. He was one of my lucky gets from one of the booster packs, and he's like surrounded by ice, and there's like an effect where there's sort of a flurry blowing around him, which is like a cool effect. So it's cool to collect those guys in some sense, but you know, you're either going to be waiting for a lot of timers to go off, or you're going to be spending a lot of money if you want to collect like every Pokemon in the game. And they're adding new ones every day. So there's, I think, like 200 something from what I can tell now. Well, and they're, you know, adding them from every generation every day.
Yeah. Oh, and I was going to say, you were saying that it's insane how horribly it's priced and how obvious the curve in competitiveness can be just based on if you're paying for the game or not. But I don't even think it's insane. I think it's because people are willing to pay those prices. Yeah. And I think that's why it's always so steep, because it feels like in any pay to win game, it's always like this steep drop off where it's like, if you're not paying, you're not doing anything.
Yeah. Well, and some games
think about the $6 you wouldn't have spent, and you probably wouldn't even be close to where you're at now.
Well, I will say, I mean, since it's all random, I wouldn't be much closer, but I wouldn't be much further away. Well, I mean,
makes it even more of feeling cheated as a consumer almost, because it's like, if the fact that it's random, it's like, well
yeah, but it's more addicting if you have the chance of getting something rare.
Well, that's why I feel like it's almost like taking advantage of like that of, you know, consumers at that point. Because it's like, well, I guess it's the same thing as buying it's the same thing as buying like Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh cards, I suppose.
Yeah, it's unfortunately a model that a lot of people have adopted. Like, that's what Overwatch does. You buy these little loot crates to get a random assortment of goodies, and maybe you'll get the super rare awesome stuff, and you know, probably you won't. You're just gonna have to keep dumping money into the machine. I really like League of Legends microtransaction system, to where like you're buying skins, and yeah, you can buy other heroes and more characters to play with, but in that game you can have one character and compete, and they do rotating a bunch of free characters for you to try out and see, you know, if you like them before you buy them. I like stuff like that where the transactions are there, and the people who are really like that into the game can pay that much, and the people like me who are really casual with it, I can just buy Volibear, do my scoops. I don't have to buy any special skins because the main one is awesome. And I'm good. I'm good. I don't have to spend any more money. And that builds this kind of like interesting model where it's kind of like a tax system where the rich pay more than the poor. And that can be where free-to-play really works well, both for the developer and for the consumer. But in this case, they're just trying to wring every consumer dry. So, you know, they're seeing how much money Michael's willing to spend. They're going to see how much money little Timmy's willing to spend. And the guy who's on top, man, They got you good. They got you good, man. I was
going to say, you know, it's funny. It seems like all these in-game transactions are like DLC. It's like they're getting more clever about it because that actually, I've never really thought about it before until now, but I'm just starting to think now that's such a genius in-game transaction method is to make it like it's like buying like cards or something. Because yeah. when you're buying cards, you know, you'll go and buy Yu-Gi-Oh cards that we used to when we were kids, and it's like you get a pack and you're excited to buy it, and then you get a bunch of crappy cards, so then you're just looking forward to the next pack you get to buy, yep. and it becomes this never-ending cycle. So
yep. And leveraging the strength of the Pokemon IP, the 700 Pokemon that are there, I mean, just it makes those chances all that smaller that you're going to find that one guy that you're looking for. I really want a Blastoise, but, you know, I have a 1 in, you know, probably 30 chance to get him. If I do the booster packs, that guarantees me one rare guy. So, yeah, it's a little tough. But that being said, it's an interesting game. Check it out. It's totally free to you. And like the disclaimer says, you don't have to spend anything on it. But if you are wanting to like climb the ranks and get a high monthly rank, expect to, you know, spend some change. It's just how mobile games work. And, you know, if you've never played a mobile game, maybe don't start. And if you have before, you know how this goes.
Avoid it like the plague.
I have also been playing a little Freedom Planet. Got that game in the indie humble bundle for Wii U and 3DS some time ago. I was always interested in playing it. I played the demo as part of like a digital E3 event maybe like a year and a half ago, and it's kind of enjoyable. It's trying to be a little bit of Sonic, a little bit of Gunstar Heroes, a little bit of a beat 'em up. It's an interesting hodgepodge of different indie things, kind of like Shovel Knight. I don't think it's quite as polished as Shovel Knight is, but definitely an interesting game. Would highly recommend it. It's probably on sale on Steam or the Wii U at some point. And if it isn't, then it probably will be. And in kind of comparison and contrast to that, I downloaded the Sonic games on Apple TV because they do the widescreen and they have controller support. So I had Sonic 1 and 2 and played those right after. And it's interesting. Freedom Planet sort of corrected some of the problems Sonic has with fluidity. You know, in Sonic, there's all these hard stops that you get in the form of pits, in the form of just like some sort of obstacle that makes you stop immediately. And although Freedom Planet is a lot slower in pace, it maintains that fluidity by cleverly breaking up those things and not putting too many obstacles in the way of you running. So there you can play in a couple more styles where you can explore and try and get the collectibles, but you can also try and, you know, sort of speed run it through with the different characters and abilities that they have. So definitely some things that they're improving on the Sonic formula that I hope I hope in some sense that Sonic Mania isn't the last 2D Sonic game we'll ever get, but that Sonic sort of learns from, because there are some interesting things that they're doing here. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. I've been meaning to get back to Ocarina of Time. Haven't quite gotten to, and here we are. I've got a month to beat it before the Switch comes out, and I jump into Zelda. It might not be, but I'm gonna try. I'm going to try my darndest. Matthew, what have you been playing? We've waited long enough to hear.
I know. I thought you'd never get to me. No, I've been playing. I've been going back and playing Mario Kart 8 a lot. You know, because Mario Kart 8 was actually one of my favorite games on Wii U. It's funny because I was never
one of the best selling. I think the best selling Wii U game.
I'm not sure.
I think so.
I thought it was Smash.
But no, Smash actually pretty far behind it. It was 5. Lower 5 millions. Mario Kart was 8 million. Now it was bundled with a system at a time that the Wii U was selling a little bit better, but yeah, I think it's the most popular game on there.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, I've never been like the hugest Mario Kart person. Like you know, I've always liked the games, but it was never like a huge, like
you never got into it like you did with
Yeah, 8. Well, and that's the thing. I never had to have every Mario Kart game. Like, I don't think I ever bought Double Dash, although we have it now. I think one of our friends gave it to us. But like, you know, there was plenty of Mario Kart games that I never purchased or had to have or even played that extensively. But Mario Kart 8, it was just, I remember because I had a Wii U, I'm just like, let me pick this game up. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with just you know, how they did a lot of things in that game, like how there's not these like egregious shortcuts like they've had in Mario Kart games, but yeah. kind of like just if you master the track and do certain things well, you can create your own kind of shortcuts. Or I feel like there's a degree of creativity that really went into Mario Kart 8 with the way that you do tracks. But even just having like little techniques that you can perfect, things like called fire hopping, which probably weren't intentional, but you know, it changes the dynamic of how
you do
a race.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool technique.
Yeah, well, I think it's like it's a risk and reward thing because you can easily fire hop your way to the finish line a lot quicker, but you can also fire hop and lose control of your car. And
yeah, it makes it harder to maneuver, which I think is
You know, fuck up a turn or end up hitting a banana peel that's got your name on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, and I do like the risk reward aspect to it and how it adds another layer into the game, whether you're doing time trial or full on jamboree of all the items and stuff.
Yeah, well, and so that's why I really fell in love with that game, and I spent so much time on it. So I've been playing it again, just kind of gauging it, seeing like it gearing up for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, seeing if I really want to make that purchase. And it's funny because, like, you know. Not to like toot my own horn or anything, but like Michael knows, but I'm really good at Mario Kart 8. Like,
he's nasty at this game. Well, absolutely disgusting in all the best ways.
Well, yeah, and I got pretty good at the game, but it's you know, that's why I thought like it'd be fun to get this new one, see if there's any tournaments they're doing for it, or just go online and wreck some 12-year-olds. But
it's right, bitch.
No, but I don't know, man. It's just, I'm having trouble, like, just justifying in my head, like, spending another $60 on a game that literally adds a couple more characters that really aren't much more interesting than the characters they already have, except for about...
I'm all about Baby Bowser.
Well, let me finish my goddamn sentence. Okay. But besides Baby Bowser, but then also including a mode that it honestly should have been in there since the first game. But that's why it's just like, to me, like, even if they just added 4 to 8 more courses, that would have been enough for me. Like, it's all about the courses for me. But it's just like,
have they confirmed that they're not adding anything else?
Yeah, it's just the battle mode and then the couple new characters
and probably just the DLC.
And as
included.
Much as I love that game, and as much as I'd love to commence the ass whooping of the 12-year-olds, I don't know if I can bring myself to spend another $60 on that. Like, I mean, and it's just, the characters were already uninteresting in the first one. Like, they had some
Rose,
like,
Gold Peach was kind of weird, and like Silver just, Mario, and Space
like
Gray
dumb shit
Wario.
Like that. But then you get this game and you're thinking, oh man, now you're gonna put in characters like maybe Diddy Kong or like Petey Piranha or Birdo or something, and it's like, nope, you get like Squid Girl, which has nothing to do with Mario, and maybe Bowser is.
I mean,
cool,
I like the little cameos they're doing with they
but
did
I'm just
Zelda
saying,
and Animal
like,
Crossing.
Or even like, I don't know, man. For me, like I said, I just think that they could have done more.
I mean, that game, they could have the DLC, but that game isn't necessarily for you. It's for all the people who didn't buy.
No, and
the Wii U.
I understand. That's what I'm saying, though. For me personally, I'm having
all
trouble like justifying
86 million of them that bought the Wii but didn't buy the Wii U. It's for those 86 million people.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully it catches on like that. And if it does, I think it'll be more justifiable for me to go back and play it if everybody else is doing it. But I just think, man, it's just tough to you know, because like I feel like the DLC would have been all the DLC they did, the like 16 courses they added, I feel like that would be worth more than $60 than the fucking deluxe game. Like, I don't know, for me anyway.
Well, I think that's gonna be included. I imagine
what I'm saying is like, if they were selling that DLC for $60, I think I'd rather buy that than buying, you know, Mario
battle
Kart
mode.
With battle mode.
Yeah.
And you see with the advertisements, that's all they've been advertising. And I don't know, I just find
that the people
really
have been crying out for. They played Mario Kart 64, which in retrospect is just not a very good game.
No, it's not. It's
and
one of those
like,
games
battle
that everybody
mode. I played that when I was a kid, and they're clamoring for it when it's really just not
that
really good.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart 64 sucked, to be honest. Rainbow Road in that game is one of the worst, painstaking, you know, teeth pulling.
Yeah, I hate all the rainbow roads in that one.
Well, that now, one, no, it's like a 10-minute level. It takes forever just to complete one lap.
Yeah,
it's literally
I'm,
takes like 10 minutes.
I'm
to
talking
get
about all,
race.
Yeah, all the rainbow
so
roads.
So stupid.
Now, Matthew, if I were a listener or a watcher, depending on what way you're consuming this media. And I wanted to know more about Mario Kart 8 when it comes out. You know, maybe know if it was good, if I should buy it. Where can I go to do that?
The Bento Block?
The Bento Block. The Bento Block YouTube channel. I'm going to try and do reviews of all these Switch games as they come out. And eventually, you know, hopefully we can get to the point where we build a relationship with Nintendo, get the codes early. But you can look forward to game reviews on the channel, on the YouTube channel. There probably won't be a podcast form of that because I don't know how that would work out. But go on to the YouTube channel, subscribe if you're interested in that, and other Switch items that we'll get to later on in the podcast. Did you play anything else this week, Matthew?
Not really. That's all pretty much I've been focusing on, to be totally honest. I was going to say, it was funny when you were talking about, you said, the Bento Block? The Bento Block. I thought of the Gingerbread Man and Shrek. The Muffin Man?
The Muffin Man! Well, thank you for your honesty.
I tried picking up Pokemon Go again, but that game is like...
I feel like logging in to see if Blastoise got stronger.
Yeah, I always just check it. I'm just like, I am having trouble even like doing
the... I haven't opened it in a long time, but I haven't deleted it yet either. So, I mean, there's
something. Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to delete it, but it's just like, man, that game just totally went the way of the dinosaur to me. So sad. It's just out of nowhere. Just a fucking meteor hit the earth.
Just checking my handy-dandy iPad. The next thing that we've got coming up is The Rundown, your weekly... group of the news that matters most to you. We're not covering all the indie games of Hoodledy Doodle making their Oodle Caboodle Nintendo Switch game and, you know, confirming a random port for Switch of a game that came out 8 years ago. Not covering all those items, but the bigger news items.
Skyrim!
Collecting, you know, impressions that we can give you guys and sort of, you know, how to gauge the future based on what some of these things, how some of these things have gone down. And I got to put a disclaimer here. We were recording this on Wednesday night, February 1st. February 2nd is when Fire Emblem Heroes comes out. So by the time you're watching and listening to this, you'll probably have Fire Emblem Heroes on your phone. We will cover that next week as we don't have the ability to travel through time. And it takes a while to edit this podcast. So we're going to cover that next week. This week, however, we've got so much happened. I was, you know, talking to Matthew, trying to see if we could record on Thursday instead and delay the podcast recording to get some Fire Emblem impressions. But then on January 31st, Nintendo released a bunch of financial information. They had their investor meeting, and there's a lot of interesting information that we can pull. Now, I can't speak to their earnings and operating profits and, you know, gauge anything based on that because I'm not a financial analyst. I'm just a guy who likes Nintendo and podcasting. But what I can do is look at some of the interesting bits of information, present that to you, and give you some impressions based on some of those other numbers. So, where I want to start with is last week we talked about a little game called Pokemon Sun and Pokemon Moon. Pokemon Sun and Moon had a pretty good start to the end of this quarter and really just like a start to that new generation of Pokemon. So it has sold 14.69 million units, outselling its predecessor, Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. It sits behind X and Y, which has continued to sell 136 million in this last fiscal year, giving that life-to-date sales of just over 16 million. And it makes it the third best-selling 3DS game, and it's only been out for about 3 or 4 months. November, December. Yeah, 3 months. Because it came like mid-November.
No, I thought it was like end of November.
Something like that. In any case, around 3 months. That is pretty impressive. Because it's outsold Omega Ruby and Sapphire, Alpha Sapphire lifetime sales. Which, I mean, if you look at the numbers, the way that they sort of generally break down is the original Game Boy games, Red and Blue, Red, Blue, and Green, sold about 30 million. Another 17 million for Yellow, if I'm remembering the number right. Around 20 million for Gold and Silver, 7 million for Crystal. So the interstitial ones definitely don't sell as much. But then there was, you know, so it dropped until Ruby and Sapphire, which sold just around 16 million. Then jetted up to 18 million with the DS generation, Platinum and Diamond and Diamond and Pearl, and then you know, has sort of been falling since. But this could be another spike in the Pokemon IP.
But X and Y, you said sold 136 million.
You know what? You're right. That was a totally incorrect number. It sold another 136,000, I believe. So it's, in any case, lifetime sales of 16 million. It's been out for a few years.
The X and Y? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For a second, I thought X and Y was like for...
Sorry.
Like a way better selling Pokemon game, which I was about to say is like a travesty. You know, like, it's... I feel like that's like the worst Pokemon game.
What I can tell you is it has outsold Ruby and Sapphire, or right about. It's like neck and neck with that. It has outsold Black and White as well. So it is one of the... better Pokemon games. It is a spike up from that, but I think this could be even bigger. This could possibly catch Gold and Silver, which you know, that hasn't been touched since Gold and Silver came out. Probably not going to touch the Red and Blue sales. Probably not. That was pretty legendary there. But legendary. I mean, crazy, and they give us a statistic here, a comparison of sell through from release to the end of the year. After 7 weeks of sales, Pokemon Sun and Moon had hit 12 million. For comparison's sake, in the same span of time, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire only sold 7.5 million, and X and Y only sold 9.65 million, and X and Y had 12 weeks of sales to hit that number. So off to an incredible start. And in fact, the sell-through of hardware and software, you know, Nintendo's had a really good last chunk of the quarter. You can see their software sales just skyrocket toward the end of the year. Their hardware sales were, you know, pretty much the same. They sort of leveled out, but what an incredible start. I still don't think this is the Pokemon game that's like the second coming of Red and Blue, and I think we're still waiting on that game. But wow, what a interesting year, and really what I think is like the last big year the 3DS will have.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's encouraging. I mean, I think it's encouraging for it's showing Nintendo that everybody still loves Pokemon, which I think they were very aware of, but that seeing like a reinvigorated interest with it is like, you know, more reason for them to continue doing it and like, you know, possibly upgrade it like on the Nintendo Switch to something.
Yeah, and they had awesome. They had some interesting stats as well, where they said that 17% of the people playing Sun and Moon had never played a Pokemon game before. So they've got a healthy base of people who have never played it before, and this game has done a really good job to re-engage Pokemon fans in their 20s and 30s. So the people who grew up with the originals, and I think, you know, really kind of aiming at them with how Pokemon Go was that original generation, and the Alolan forums, you know, sort of like, you know, making you remember, like, oh, you remember Sandslash before, you know, Pokemon turned into household objects and consumable foods. You know, remember those Pokemon? You know, it did really well to reinvigorate that. So I'm very well pleased with this. I think it's awesome. I love that Pokemon got a resurgence. I think they need to be careful with the success that they have and not just keep doing the same thing. They really do need to rethink the way that they do Pokemon. And I hope that the Switch is just the open world RPG Pokemon where, like, you no longer have to walk through glass, that would be weird. You no longer have to walk through grass and wait for a battle to initialize. You would just see Pokemon on the field and you would, you know, engage in battle with them right there, or, you know, catch them or what have you. I think that could be really, really cool, and I hope that is where the series goes.
Yeah, even if they just did like a reboot,
in that
sense,
like, yeah, just Red and Blue, but like that, I'm ready. They could remake Red and Blue every 5 years. I'd buy it every time. Yeah. In fact, I bought Blue, I bought Yellow, and I bought Leaf Green, and then I bought Blue on the Virtual Console. So like, I'll always give that a shot. That's just a phenomenal game. Next piece of news, it's pretty much all downhill from here, Matthew. So 3DS had a pretty good year with software sales. Amiibo, not so much. In the first year that Amiibo existed, they sold 20 million units, and this year they sold 6.5 million. Those Animal Crossing Amiibo were not as popular as they thought they were going to be. neither were the Kirby line, the Mario Party line. Just stinker after stinker, man.
It irritates me so much because I really feel like it's because of how they were doing Amiibo. Like,
you think they burned the consumers with supply problems?
Because that's why I lost interest, and that's why a lot of people lost interest, because you just could never get the one you wanted. It's like, dude, you just get to a certain point with things where you just don't fucking care anymore. And that's what happened for me. I'm like, dude, it's at the end of the day, it's a $13 piece of plastic. Like, I really don't care. And you know, I don't know, man. I think that was the big thing for me. Like, and Nintendo really needs to drop the mindset, because it seems like they did it with the NES Classic 2, where they're like,
they sold 1.5 million of those.
Yeah. You said what?
They sold 1.5 million of those. I think they could have sold three times that.
No, exactly. And it's like, you think about, man, like, what is that called when you're, oh my gosh, you're, what's the term for it when you're shortening the supply on purpose?
I don't know the scientific term, but they're trying to control manufacturer demand.
Yeah, exactly.
Through scarcity.
Yeah, that's what I feel like Nintendo's always done that. Like, especially they did it with the Wii, and it's like, look, it works in certain scenarios, but it's like, I think for things like Amiibos, where it's not like I have to have this type of item.
It's like a $13 figure. Come on.
No, and even like even the NES Classic, I feel like that's going to wear off for a while. Because even like, I've been playing one that my friend has, and I don't know, man, you just realize, like, I've already played these games like 8 million times. Do I really want to keep, like, looking?
Well, as far as that impulse purchase of, like, oh my gosh, this new thing is here and I want to get it, 80s, yeah! All of that has sort of worn off for me, where if I saw one at a store, I would probably buy it, but I'm not looking. Yeah. You know, if one sort of falls into my lap and I have to pay $60 for it, I'll grab it. But I'm just, I've just kind of lost interest in it. And, you know, by the time they're going to be back in stock, I'm going to have a Switch, and am I really going to play it? But it'll be a cool decoration. I'm still going to get it, because I like that. That'll be a cool decoration when my daughter is of age to start learning the ways of the wise gamers. I can take her and have her play some real games before she plays these baby games like Star Wars Battlefront, you know? Anyway.
Well, yeah, so I'm not surprised by the whole Amiibo thing, though.
So the next bummer, I think part of it too is that the lines that they did were just not very interesting.
Well, it's also that Amiibo functionality just isn't interesting enough. Like, I feel like the only reason it worked for Skylanders and Disney Infinity and all that BS is because
they beat you over the head with it.
Well, that and like it requires it to play the games.
Yeah,
like they could do imagine if Nintendo, they could be, you know, total dicks and like make a Smash game where you have to buy the Amiibo to play the character, and it would sell like crack. But
that'd be the worst.
No, it would be. It would be awful. But you know, that's the thing, is Amiibo.
Don't take that idea.
The problem is Amiibo functionality, though, is just it's not extreme, but it's not interesting either. It needs to find that like balance of being between both. But it just, Amiibo functionality sucks. It's like, dude, now you get this like special ability in a game that, you know.
I will say, so there's been many misses and a couple hits. Fire Emblem was awesome. Scan other Fire Emblem games.
I feel like that's the only one that was all right.
Perhaps, but let me explain it for the viewers here, Matthew.
It gave you characters.
Let me explain it for the viewers, and don't put your hand in front of the TV. It's going to be hard for people to see what's on the TV if you put your hand in front of it. Now, Fire Emblem had a really cool Amiibo functionality, to where in Fire Emblem Fates, they had completely different characters than you're used to in Fire Emblem. You know, as Fire Emblem does, they switch characters nearly every game. But, you know, sometimes you like the guys like Marth and Robin and Ike, and having them as like those famous characters that you can scan in as Amiibos. You can go and recruit the units. They're fully functional and they have like abilities and voice clips. And that was a really awesome point in the game, where like it didn't, you know, change Amiibo to where like it makes you buy it. Like you're really missing out on something. But for those who you know, enjoy the Fire Emblem characters and made that investment on the Amiibo, they get to scan them in. They did a similar thing for the the other game that the same developer made, codenamed Steam, you could scan in those first four Fire Emblem amiibos. Although what I have to say about that is it's pretty shitty how they didn't build any functionality for Roy in there. So I bought Roy day one because I wanted to unlock him in my Fire Emblem game, and he just doesn't work. He doesn't respond at all. And I'm curious when the Corrin one comes out if that's going to work in the game, because Corrin's not even, you know, he's the main character of the freaking game. But anyway, the couple good examples, but yeah, I mean, Yoshi's Woolly World is Mario Maker. Actually, Mario Maker was okay, but mostly costumes.
To me, one of the more decent ones, because you at least for some of them, you're getting like a decent skin. But see, like even in like Smash, like you get a com of your character that, like once you actually level it up.
Tried
it just,
something. It was
yeah,
it was
but
interesting.
It just becomes like really stupid to even play, where it just like... You know what's funny is the comms get so good in that game from your amiibo that you can almost trick it into dying. So like Donkey Kong is obviously my main character, but he has a horizontal recovery. But since they're so good that they have to air dodge everything, you just get him to air dodge his first jump when he's getting to the ledge. Then as he's doing his second jump to get back on, you get him to air dodge that. And then by the time he's done air dodging, he tries to recover and he can't get high enough. And I'm like, this is so fucking stupid. Like,
but I remember that fox one. You couldn't touch him. You couldn't touch him.
Oh, yeah, man. No, didn't a fox? There was a fox that won a tournament.
Yeah.
It's like, it's stupid.
It happened. So, moving on. We've got some more sad news of things that didn't sell so well. So the Wii U has officially ended production this week worldwide. We are currently looking at lifetime sales of 13.56 million. This is less than 20% of the Wii console sales that happened in the Wii's lifetime. So banking on the name Wii didn't seem to pan out for them in any way, shape, or form. So... yeah, it's just real sad. I don't really have anything to end there. A lot of great games went to go die on the Wii U.
Yeah. Well,
you know, speaking of Super Smash Bros. Selling a very modest 5 million, speaking to Donkey Kong Country Returns, which was phenomenal. And they did. It didn't even make enough, sell enough copies to get on Nintendo's, like, hit list for, like, you know, this sold this million.
Which is
a
travesty
units.
Because to me, that might be the best 2D platformer of all time.
Yeah,
might be. And I don't know, man, it's really sad because like I think Nintendo just totally went away from what's worked for them in the past. And even what's funny is they took the approach of the Wii, but they didn't even use what worked with the Wii. Like the Wii had a brilliant marketing strategy.
Yeah, it's very simple.
Yeah,
hey, here's like the thing,
Wii
you move
U
the thing.
Had absolutely none.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'll always say this, but I think the name is really what killed it because it.
I think so too. Yeah.
It just confused the average consumer. I'll always remember when I talked to a woman when she was in a rush to like, I have to go downstairs and buy a PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. I'm like, well, you could always buy your son a Wii U, and she's like, oh, he already has a Wii, and I'm like, no, a Wii U, like Nintendo's newer system, and she's like, well, oh, I didn't even know about that. It's like, yeah, well. How can you expect it to with such a dumb fucking name?
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
So,
hell, even if they called it Wii 2.
Yeah. That would have made more sense.
Because it's Wii and you, which doesn't grammatically make sense.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a memorial service
now we're
for the Wii U.
Switching it up.
Switching it up. Speaking of switching, let's switch topics here for a second. So they had a part of their report talking about the smartphone market that they've developed, that Super Mario Run has been downloaded 78 million times on the iOS version, which is incredibly impressive. I mean, you think about those Pokemon numbers being 14 million, that being like a great success. 78 million is pretty incredible. Now, out of that 78 million, only about 5% paid for the game.
Oh, geez.
So most people just kind of tried it out. But, you know, I think... when I think of their mission for the mobile games, not to just like cash out and make money on mobile, because that's, you know, if they wanted to do that, then Mario would have been free to play and just asking you for money at every turn. Part of the point was to really market the characters and to get Mario in the spotlight again, because as they're rolling these things out, like the partnership with Universal Studios, as they're rolling the Switch out, getting people in, getting Mario in more hands is definitely a good thing. It's a nice little marketing thing. And, you know, out of that, I'm sure they're making back their money as far as like what they dumped into it to make it. And this still hasn't released on Android. Well, Android, it's going to get a March release and, you know, it's still going.
It seems so late. I feel like people on Android won't really care by then, but
perhaps, but I don't know. I think that, you know, with, as was the case with the App Store on iOS, you just don't get games like this often.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I lost my train of thought. I had something I was going to say.
That's unfortunate.
Darn, it is unfortunate. Well,
tune in next week and maybe
Matthew will remember. I was going to say, don't they still make a ton of money off of just, aren't they still making money off the fact that people are downloading the game, though?
Not when it's free.
Really? I thought somebody makes money for downloads.
No. I mean, I don't know the specifics of it, but as far as like their app goes, I mean, some developers put advertisements in their apps and they get paid for that. Sometimes there's like sort of like other deals that are outside of it. But as far as Super Mario Run goes, they're making money when people choose to take that dive, because otherwise they're just kind of downloading a free demo.
Oh, wow.
Now, but like I said, I mean, Pokemon Go could have been absolutely free and not made a dime, and we still would have seen that bump in the rest of the Pokemon franchise. So perhaps we're going to see the same thing in Mario. Of course, it'll probably be smaller because Pokemon Go was a cultural phenomenon. But it remains to be seen what the effects are. But, you know, maybe we'll see that with the Switch, a little bit more of a bump in a customer interest perhaps in future Mario titles.
Perhaps.
And if not, then we'll see Nintendo in 5 years when they don't make consoles anymore and they'll just make a free-to-play Mario game that's like, hey, to buy this coin, you need to wait for your meter to charge or invite 5 Facebook friends to this to keep playing. Or you can pay us $12.
Or you need to prove you're not a robot.
Speaking of mobile games, Animal Crossing has been officially delayed. While the Fire Emblem mobile iteration is releasing tomorrow, the Animal Crossing title has been delayed to next fiscal year. So it could happen anytime after March and before next April. So this is said to be in part due to a shifting in development energy to Super Mario Run on the Android, which is set to release in March, like we said, and the Fire Emblem game that's also coming out. But you know, I'm bummed about this, but I the mobile space is pretty jam packed already. Having a Mario game, you know, 2 months later getting a Fire Emblem game, I'm willing to wait for Animal Crossing, especially with the Switch release.
And even then, like, with mobile games, I think if I can wait on any game, it's a mobile game.
Yeah.
Just because it's not like a full-fledged, like...
Plus, if I want to get that Blastoise, I'll have to wait, you know, about 40 days in you know, Pokemon Duel for my things to recharge, and I can finally get that booster pack with them in it.
Games like that just remind me of things like World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Very tedious Skinner box experiments. Next news item. There is a curious Instagram post that Rayman creator Michel Ancel posted on his personal profile page on Instagram. Let me read you the caption, Matthew. See what you think about it.
Caption this.
So, Michel Ancel says, quote, "Everyday's life, got to fix the plumbery, and felt a bit rabbitified," which I know the English on that sounds kind of strange. Forgive him, he's French. But he mentions plumbing and rabbits, which sort of hints at a Mario Rabbids crossover RPG that we've been hearing about, that's been reported from a few different leakers in the industry. And I just I suppose this is really gonna happen, or this guy's a troll and he's just trying to, you know, further corroborate the ridiculous rumor that game would ever exist. It could be either, honestly, because that game shouldn't exist.
No, it's just we'll
find out in E3, I suppose.
I'm just looking at it, I'm like, so it's not a fucking joke apparently, because that's what I thought it was. No, I still don't understand. Like, I mean, and maybe we'll get an idea if this actually is a real game and it ends up being announced, like, of what it is. But I just can't imagine, like, what the appeal of this game would be.
I don't know. I mean,
like, I just don't understand. Like,
that guy knows how to make games.
We could be getting. We might be getting a Mario and Rayman Rabbids crossover.
Which is a little cluttered,
like,
if you ask me.
Why don't you just do a Mario and Rayman crossover at that
point? Mario Kart, then Mario Odyssey, and then having a Mario RPG crammed into the same year. That seems a little much.
And I think this is Nintendo's problem always. That was the thing with the Wii U, is all we were getting was Mario games initially. It felt like, it's like you got Pikmin 3 and games like that, but those aren't really system sellers. But it was like New Super Mario Bros. U, and then the next big, big game I remember coming out was 3D World, and it's just like...
Yeah.
Dude, like...
Which, I mean, Mario, like, I sells, if you look at the system sales.
It does, but it's like, I feel like Mario now is not a system seller alone. Like, I think Mario sells well in cohesion with something else. With, like, Smash, or, like, with, in this case, with the Nintendo Switch, like, with Zelda. But, like, I don't know. People don't just buy systems to play, like, New Super Mario Bros. U, and I think that was totally the case with the Wii U.
Yeah, which, I mean, New Super Mario Bros. U was... a little bit, you know, them trying to sort of extract sales out of that a third time. Because with the DS game, New Super Mario Brothers, that was an absolute juggernaut hit. Like, amazing. That did amazing numbers. I think in all it sold something like 35 million or something like that.
So did New Super Mario Bros. Wii on the
Wii. Wii, yeah. Now, the big change they did with that was the four-player mode and, you know, turning the Wii remote sideways. Plus, you know, you think of the install base of these two systems, how crazy that was.
Well,
but
that's
but
what
those
I'm
games
saying is like...
those games did numbers, man. And I just think when it got around to the Wii U version, they didn't really make any sort of innovation. They didn't make any sort of like big thing. The graphics didn't even look different, so you could barely tell that it was a new game.
Well, see,
and I think that was where the problem
was. I don't think the average... See, to me, I don't think that's what it is, because I don't think the average consumer was really going to be able to tell the difference. I just think that the difference, like you just mentioned, is those systems already had huge install bases, which at that point, Mario is great. But it's like, as far as like... giving somebody a system and saying buy it so you can play Mario, it's like, I just don't feel like people do that anymore.
Sure, yeah, I might agree.
It's just not like that
having
anymore.
It as a pack and always helped, but yeah, I mean, you're seeing diminishing returns with that.
Yeah,
with you know, the New Super Mario Brothers 2 on the 3DS didn't quite take off like the original did on the original 3DS, and we can say the same for the Wii U version as opposed to the Wii. So definitely getting diminishing returns on the New Super Mario Brothers IP. I think with certain redefinitions of the Mario formula, like Mario Odyssey could be that system seller, as I believe Mario 64 was, and Mario World.
So I think Mario Odyssey will sell really well, but that's because it's not, like I said, I think for all the people who end up buying the system for, like, Zelda, all those people are going to buy Mario, too.
Yeah.
Now, if Mario was the launch title versus Zelda being the holiday title, I feel like it would be a different story.
Well.
But, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I mean, even for the Wii, I think it's like there's so many people who bought that system and only were playing Wii Sports, and they're like, holy shit, there's a four-player Mario game coming out.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, all that stuff sort of builds upon itself, but I think that's, you know, that's what they're routinely banking on, and I think they should really, to your point, I think they should do some better franchise care. Give us a Metroid, give us an F-Zero. Yeah, they're not going to sell like a Mario game does, so, but if Mario outstays its welcome, and if Pokemon outstays its welcome, what do you have?
No, because it just becomes oversaturated at that point, like... Yeah, and that's what's bummed me out about the Switch, is that, like, I'm so sick of just getting Mario and Zelda, but then so far all I'm hearing about is Zelda, Mario
well,
Kart
getting,
8,
you're
Mario...
You're getting Splatoon, you're getting ARMS, you're getting Fire Emblem Heroes.
What I know there's other games. What I'm saying, though, is that, like, some of these big titles so far is, like, Zelda...
Right, those are,
like
the bigger games that they're promoting.
Mario Odyssey, Mario Kart, Mario Rabbids. It's like, all right, I get it, but, like...
Watch them jam in a
People
Paper
like
Mario
variety,
in there, too.
Yeah. Oh, God. Color Splash 2.
Kill me now. So, that's...
I think I would rather drink a can of paint than play Color Splash. And just fucking die from that. Just...
It would probably be more entertaining. Color Splash is all right. So that was Nintendo's earnings report. That was the other news that happened in the week. We are running at 49 minutes, so we're going to wrap up the podcast in a minute here. Matthew, is there anything on your chest that you would like to get out there?
not that I can think of.
I just remembered one more news item.
I just thought of that joke in SpongeBob when he's like, you just need to get it off your chest, and there's actually this, like, sea urchin thing sucking on his chest.
So, there was one other thing that I saw. Not a huge news item, but a tip for you guys that are looking to purchase a Switch. Hori, I think I'm saying that right, H-O-R-I, the company is making some Nintendo Switch accessories. So they're making SD cards, although the SD cards are incredibly small. But what's more interesting is they're making, like, different stands that can go in it, different, like, films that can go over the screen if you're into that, if you're a nerd and you buy screen protectors.
Loser!
There's also an Ethernet adapter that plugs in via USB. So I assume that's for the dock, and that'll give me an Ethernet connection to my Switch when it's docked. Go and buy that, people. It's $30. It'll make your download speeds much faster and also give you a less lag inside of online matches when you're playing your Splatoon and your eventual Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, all that stuff. You know, I don't want to be lagging while I'm playing you, because it's going to be harder to whoop up on your ass that way, so I need to be crisp and smooth. Get Google Fiber. Get the Ethernet adapter. Plug it in. Just plug it in. Wires are so much faster than Wi-Fi. I've noticed that, like, with my laptop. I've got AT&T fiber in my apartment. With my laptop, I get about 450 megabytes with the megabits with the wireless connection. Almost at 1,000 with the Ethernet.
It's over double.
Yeah, wires are underrated, man.
I was gonna say
wires are underrated.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think also one thing we didn't mention, but I think they started doing a week or so ago. But now you can pre-order the Pro Controller.
You can, if it's still out there. There was a day last week where they had just opened up pre-orders. I managed to snag one at the GameStop by me, but wow, man, check online, check at the GameStop, see if they've got one, and see if you can snag one of those guys. But also, like, you know, if you're on the fence of this stuff, you know, part of the reason that I'm buying all this stuff up is because I care about you, man. I want to buy these things. I want to test them out. I want to tell you what I think about them, put them on the YouTube channel, maybe make a couple bucks on the Patreon on the side, you know what I mean? But I want to buy these things right now with my own hard-earned cash taken away from my baby's college fund. Not really, but but I'm buying these so I can let you guys know how this stuff works out. So you can be looking forward to some hardware reviews, some accessory reviews. I won't be all boring with it and give you a 5-minute, you know, spiel about how this controller feels in my hands, but I'm going to try and give you an idea of whether it's worth purchasing or not. If you're on the fence, what I've been hearing from some of the bloggers that have gotten their hands on the Switch is that the most comfortable way to play for them is to detach both Joy-Con and not put it in the grip, but just hold them separate, because you can, you know, as the guy sort of demonstrated in the Switch presentation, you could, like, you know, kind of relax on the couch. And I never realized this until I saw that presentation, just how awkward it is to hold a game controller that is close, with your shoulders kind of clenched in and your arms close together. I never realized how awkward that was until I saw him doing that. But, well, I'll see. I'll test the stuff out for you. Let you know how it goes, if that's really worth the $80 that they're charging.
Swag.
Swag indeed. So that's all we got for you guys today. Next week, if we don't run 50-something minutes, we'll do a bonus round, maybe a memorial on the Wii U. And maybe for the bonus rounds kind of leading up to the Switch, I want you to think about a game that you want to talk about next week, and just, you know, give a shout out to, for those people who might still have a Wii U or might purchase one on the low. We're going to kind of, you know, recount some of our favorite Wii U experiences and stories over the next few weeks. If you've got your own that you would like to share, a favorite game or an experience at a Smash tournament or something like that, write into the show at thebentoblock.com/we the people. We would really appreciate you to participate in the show. And that's essentially all we've got for you. So we will see you next week. After these couple things that I'm going to ask of you. So, like I said, weekly podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a favorable review. If you want to say shitty things about us, you can just keep it to yourself because that doesn't help me at all. But no, even constructive feedback is helpful. If you're on YouTube, do the likes, the comments, the shares, all that jazz. And if you really like this kind of stuff and you want to support us, pledge us a dollar or two on Patreon. That would really help the show grow into a bigger and better thing. We could look at getting some new equipment, spending some more time show planning, not doing this at 1:17 a.m. in the morning when I have to be up at 7. We could clear up. You see, I'm so tired. I'm starting to screw up my words. But we would really appreciate your support. Check out our other content, too. See if that interests you. And have a great fucking night, man. Have a great morning, if it's morning. And, you know, just thanks for joining us. I love you very much in all your inmost parts.